your voice in the community. The Great Southern Sounds of Melbourne, 88.3 Southern FM.
If you were to believe some critics of the United States space program, it has been wandering without a strategic plan since the days of the Eisenhower administration. True, it has sometimes had goals. Kennedy's land a man on the moon before the decade is out was one such goal. Reagan's space station was another goal. But none of these were part of an overall strategic plan. When, in 2010, President Obama cancelled President Bush's goal-oriented Back to the Moon Constellation project, he didn't announce an overview of where his country should go about its space activities. True, he advocated a funding increase for NASA and even said what would be done with the money should Congress approve it.
We start by increasing NASA's budget by $6 billion over the next 5 years. I want people to understand the context of this. This is happening even as we have instituted a freeze on discretionary spending and sought to make cuts elsewhere in the budget. So NASA, from the start, several months ago when I issued my budget, was one of the areas where we didn't just maintain a freeze, but we actually increased funding by $6 billion. By doing that, we will ramp up robotic exploration of the solar system, including a probe of the sun's atmosphere, new scouting missions to Mars and other destinations, and an advanced telescope to follow Hubble, allowing us to peer deeper into the universe than ever before. We will increase Earth-based observation to improve our understanding of our climate and our world, science that will garner tangible benefits, helping us to protect our environment for future generations. And we will extend the life of the International Space Station, likely by more than 5 years, while actually using it for its intended purpose, conducting advanced research that can help improve the daily lives of people here on Earth, as well as testing and improving upon our capabilities in space. This includes technologies like more efficient life support systems that will help reduce the cost of future missions. And in order to reach the space station, we will work with a growing array of private companies competing to make getting to space easier and more affordable.
This is the Space Show with Andrew Rennie. Now, speaking at the Kennedy Space Center in 2010 April before an audience that included yours truly, Obama made brief mention of a next chapter for NASA in the wake of the retirement of the space shuttle.
So this is the next chapter that we can write together here at NASA. We will partner with industry. We will invest in cutting-edge research and technology. We will set far-reaching milestones and provide the resources to reach those milestones. And step by step, we will push the boundaries, not only of where we can go, but what we can do.
That speech was aimed more at shoring up electoral support on Florida's Space Coast than in giving detailed policy announcements. Obama even went so far as to note that people were questioning his policy.
Now, I know there have been a number of questions raised about my administration's plan for space exploration, and these questions come at a time of transition. And understandably, this adds to the worries of folks concerned not only about their own futures, but about the future of the space program to which they've devoted their lives. But I also know that underlying these concerns is a deeper worry, one that precedes not only this plan, but this administration. It stems from the sense that people in Washington, driven sometimes less by vision than by politics, have for years neglected NASA's mission and undermined the work of the professionals who fulfill it. We've seen that in the NASA's budget, which has risen and fallen with the political winds. But we can also see it in other ways, in the reluctance of those who hold office to set clear, achievable objectives, to provide the resources to meet those objectives, and to justify not just these plans, but the larger purpose of space exploration in the 21st century. All that has to change. And with the strategy I'm outlining today, it will.
4 years on, Obama still has his critics, not least among the Republicans in the House of Representatives on Capitol Hill. Recently, a radical proposal has been mooted by entrepreneur Dennis Tito and others to fly NASA's Orion spacecraft on a daring flight past both Venus and Mars. This first manned Orion flight would be launched by an as-yet unbuilt new large rocket in 2021 November. Carrying a crew of two, the Orion would fly past Venus in 2022 April. The Venusian gravity would sling the craft out to Mars, which will be flown past in 2022 October. Landing back here on Earth would be in 2023 June for a total mission duration of 600 days. To examine this idea, the Science, Space and Technology Committee of the House of Representatives held a hearing on February the 27th. Four expert witnesses were called upon to give testimony. Now, we've heard some of the evidence presented in the first three of our programs about the Mars 2021 flyby. This evening, we hear more of that discussion. The politicians want to know whether, if the United States were to proceed with the proposed 2021 mission, there might be an opportunity to cooperate with private or international partners. Scott Pace, the director of the Space Policy Institute at George Washington University, was called upon to respond.
What I would like to add is to echo a comment from Dr. Magnus on the need for a larger context for all of these things. I think that's absolutely true for asteroid retrieval missions. It's true for a lunar base. It's true for a Mars flyby mission. And I think that the larger context that we're often missing is some of our national security and our foreign policy interests in civil space cooperation. Civil space cooperation is not something done just for fun or even just only for inspiration, as important as that is. It's also a way of drawing other countries to us and having them work and cooperate and participate with us. We as a country are more dependent upon a peaceful, quiet, and stable space environment than any other nation in the world. There are many, many new players coming into the world who are active in space, and many of them don't have the kinds of experiences that we have. So how do we bring them into the community of spacefaring nations to act in responsible ways? Getting them involved in cooperation, getting them involved in caring about having a peaceful and stable space environment is something that I think is deeply in our national security and foreign policy interests. So to the extent that we can create cooperative opportunities on the moon, Mars, asteroids, that provide opportunities for other countries to work with us, we will be protecting our own national security. And that is a long-term geopolitical interest this country will have. President Kennedy met a short-term geopolitical interest with his lunar decision. We have, I think, an opportunity to serve our long-term national security and geopolitical interests with a program of space exploration.
Pace was further pressed on this issue of cooperating partners.
Dr. Pace, you just mentioned the cooperative efforts, how important that is, and for all of nations to participate. Are there any other nations involved with putting money into this project?
Nope.
Okay, and that's it. Thank you. I appreciate that. There is correct. There are not. And
Could I add one? There were initial conversations on the possibility of contribution of a lab of the habitat structure. I mean, obviously, all those kind of things have to have to play their course. But there have been some initial discussions internationally.
There are some discussions. All right. When we go from some discussions to actually commitments, so there's a lot of space between those two.
Former astronaut Sandy Magnus was quizzed on some wording in her formal testimony to the committee. We heard that wording in program one of our series.
Now, let us note that this is a mission that has to be accomplished in 7 years. I mean, we have to do this within that 7-year period. All of these factors have to be together. And then the technology has to work. And I think, isn't this mission the very first mission that a SLS is going to have? And it's got to happen within that 7-year period. Would you like to give us your estimate as to a guesstimate as what the chances of, I mean, you've followed space programs. How many have really met their deadline in the last few years?
again, if we really wanted to do this and we committed to do it, we could do it. But that means it has to be fully resourced with the appropriate manpower and money and everything else.
Now, the essential word, the most important word you used, and I used when you testified, was the word can and could.
Yeah.
That's a lot different than will.
Exactly.
And the fact is that do you really see that right now that there's a commitment in this country so that we don't start a butt down this trail, spending a lot of money, and then at the end of the trail not have accomplished the mission because the will wasn't there?
Yeah, that's the big problem. We don't have a really strong commitment for a long-term vision for our space program.
So we don't have it now, but we should move forward on this, even though we don't have that will now.
If you recall in my testimony, I commented that any mission that we do, whether it's a lunar mission or an asteroid mission or the Mars flyby, all needs to be in a larger context of what are we trying to do long-term as a country in space, and we need to make that plan.
The gentleman's time has long since expired.
The gentleman, just 10 seconds, and that is just to say there are many great space projects that we need to fund. There are many of them, and this...
thank you, Mr. Roy.
This would mean not that we're retreating from space.
The issue of funding budgets briefly became an issue that was put to Scott Pace.
It's often been said that space exploration is a go-as-we-can-afford-to-pay endeavor. No Bucks, no Buck Rogers. Congress has consistently provided more funding for the Orion and Space Launch System than the Obama administration has requested over the past several years. Congress has placed a higher priority on human spaceflight than the Obama administration. The current schedule for NASA's first manned flight is 2021 on the Orion and SLS, but that is based on President Obama's budget plan, not the higher budget level that Congress has authorized and appropriated over the past several years. So my question for Dr. Pace is, In terms of affordability for a Mars 2021 flyby or other space exploration endeavors like a return to the moon, it's about setting budget priorities. In your opinion, what priority has the Obama administration's budget proposals given to human spaceflight compared to other priorities for NASA?
Well, I think there's been a decline in the overall NASA budget, certainly over the last several years. It's been quite volatile. The top line has vibrated quite a bit, and exploration monies have declined. So monies have shifted over into other priorities, certainly climate change research, technology work, all of which are, you know, perfectly reasonable and important things to do. But human space exploration has seen a long-term decline. But even more critical than the money, I think, has been the lack of a sense of, well, what do you do next? For example, what comes after the space station? What are the next steps that we're going to engage with other countries in? I'll say a very positive view of the President's national space policy, which by and large I think is a very well-written and thoughtful document. The section of it that I disagree with is one on exploration, because I don't think it sets out a clear set of milestones and doesn't set out a clear set of priorities. So it's understandable that the monies that NASA does get often get diverted into other things other than human space exploration, because the national policy itself doesn't really clearly articulate what those priorities ought to be.
Both the politicians and the expert witnesses kept circling back to the need for the president to set goals for the United States space program. Representative Dana Rohrabacher of California, a Republican, had this to say on the issue.
Yeah, I think we've done our job as Congress and as this committee and subcommittee really codifying this commitment to future deep space exploration, and we want to see that happening. I think in the opening remarks by the chairman and ranking member, as well as the opening remarks for all the witnesses, there's a consistent theme here. We need a vision and a strategy. And Dr. Magnus, you talk about having this broader strategic vision. Where do we want to go? And then setting concrete goals. And I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, I grew up in a time, and many of us grew up in a time when, we were curious. We set goals. We didn't know how we were going to get to that goal. You invoked President Kennedy setting out that goal. We grew up in a time where, we talked about what we could do as Americans. General Lyles, you talk about, if we want to do this, we can do it. We don't shy away from that challenge. In fact, we can meet that challenge if, in fact, that's what we want to do. So we've got to set that goal. You know, we've had the opportunity to meet with Administrator Bolden, a few months ago, again expressing this commitment to set for NASA to set a goal for the administration, the president to set a goal. We're working. With this committee, we've drafted a letter to the president because we want to see that commitment. We want to see a clearly articulated strategy from the president that says, here's what we're going to do, here's the time frame we're going to do it in, and here's how we're going to get there. We need that as a time frame. Dr. Pace, you touched on this is just not about going to Mars. It is in our geopolitical and national security interest to also continue to reaffirm our commitment and our leadership in space, because it is increasingly a national security issue. It is increasingly a geopolitical issue. With that, I look forward to working with our committee and subcommittee as we push the president to clearly articulate a commitment to deep space exploration.
Ro Rohrabacher then called on Sandy Magnus, who is now the executive director of the prestigious American Institute of Aeronautics and Astronautics.
Dr. Magnus, I agree with you wholeheartedly that we have to have a strategy here, and then we have to have clearly defined goals. What would you articulate as, if the president were sitting right here, what that strategy should be?
Well, clearly there's been enough discussion around Mars that the consensus in the community is that's our ultimate place to go. I think we still need to flesh out the what are we going to do when we get there, and what's going to be our sustaining effort on Mars. Are we going to set up a base and have people visit it occasionally? What kind of science are we going to do? What kind of technology do we need to develop there to move even further beyond? So I think we still need some discussion about that. But in that context, then I think the questions you need to ask are, what technology needs to be developed, what capabilities are important for our country to develop versus how we might leverage international cooperation, because I think it will be an international effort. So we have to look strategically at the capabilities and the technology and the types of experience we want our country to lead in, and then build that into the plan. Then we have to look at where we are from an industrial viewpoint, how we want to leverage the architecture to continue the utilization of low Earth orbit, and then what series of missions do you use to build up these capabilities and demonstrate them to reduce the risk of going to Mars? And those are the questions that would frame that plan.
Fabulous. So you, in a matter of 30 seconds, you've laid out a strategy, a goal, and some steps to reach that long-term goal. Part of this also is all the additional benefits we get when we stretch our goals. I'm a physician by training. I can think of numerous medical benefits as we deal with how we're going to deal with the radiation risk, how we're going to deal with the sub-zero temperatures and so forth. I mean, there's tons of applications that are going to come off of this, tons of jobs that will be created off of this. So again, I wholeheartedly encourage the president, and again with this committee, and look forward to working to push the president to clearly articulate what that strategy is, that goal is, so then we can do our job in Congress, working towards hitting that goal. And again, I would say we're a country that doesn't shy away from challenges. If we set a goal and we clearly articulate that goal, I think to quote General Wiles, never underestimate what the American spirit can do. And I wouldn't, if we want to do this in 7 years, we'll do it in 7 years. But let's actually make that commitment.
They say that in the American political system, the president proposes and Congress disposes. At this hearing, Democratic Maryland Representative Donna Edwards asked the four witnesses whether Congress needs to be more directive in its oversight of space activities. Retired General Lester Lyles from the United States Air Force and Scott Pace responded.
I have to say it's been interesting to listen to the concerns that have been expressed about the budget, because, of course, there were people who were perfectly prepared to see NASA operate under sequestration levels would never get us to an overarching vision to make our way to Mars and back. And so I'm glad that we're tried to change this conversation a little bit and look realistically at what it is that that the space community needs to do, the scientific and research community, but also NASA. I've been really, and I am, Dr. Magnus, one of those people who would probably certainly volunteer to leave this committee in the Congress and go to Mars and not return. Nonetheless, I do think that there are some questions that we need to answer, and I think, Dr. Magnus, you've laid those out quite well. I'm curious as to what you all think the Congress needs to do in terms of directing NASA in terms of a timeline to provide a roadmap that would be reasonable then if we were to proceed along this goal to 2021 and then into the 2030s. So do we need to be more directive in terms of asking for something back from NASA by a date certain? And do we need to say to the agency, you and who else around the table should come up with the roadmap and the plan? My fear is that it might be left to members of Congress who have no real scientific expertise at all to be able to determine whether it's the moon, a Lagrangian point, the International Space Station, or an asteroid that makes most sense for precursor missions to get us on our way to Mars. And so I would hate to leave it to us to do that. And I'd like you to help me think through who needs to be around the table and by when do we need something so that we can begin the kind of planning that we need for budgets and program. And so any of you, if you have some comments about that.
Congressman, let me just take a quick stab at that, if you will, from a perhaps a little different perspective than some of the other witnesses might espouse. I would hope that the Congress would look at NASA as an agency from an enterprise perspective. And by that I mean, when I go back and look at President Bush's original space exploration program that was laid out and the commission that I served on as part of that, we looked at the broader sense of space exploration. Even the space policy, the new space policy that Scott talked about, looks at space in the holistic sense. Human spaceflight is just one element of that. And I would hope that the Congress, when considering budget needs and budget concerns for the agency, will look at the broader context of space exploration and even, if I add for the first A in NASA, the aeronautics needs for this nation, and look at it from a broad sense of understanding how all of those contribute to the needs for the United States, whether it's addressing other national needs, as I mentioned earlier, or whether it's addressing the broad needs of space exploration, but look at it all in a holistic manner, not just human space and going around Mars.
Thanks, General. Dr. Pace.
Thank you. I would actually say that the 2010 NASA authorization bill, certainly at the policy level in terms of framing what the Congress's priorities are, is really quite good. I mean, I would personally like to see some of that language maybe incorporated into the national policy. So in terms of philosophy and priority, I think that's already there. I think we know some of the constraints that bound the analysis that NASA would have to do, continuing the space station through 2024, the capabilities of SLS and Orion being available. We know the international community longer term is interested in Mars, but we also know the international community in the nearer term has coalesced around cislunar space, the global exploration strategy, the technical discussions that the International Space Exploration Coordination Groups have done. They all see cislunar space as an area that's challenging but reachable for them to do. So those major pieces, space station, Mars, the cislunar space operations, where the international community is, those major pieces are actually all largely in place. So the analysis that needs to be done is more at the cost, schedule, and risk standpoint, which I think is within what NASA can do. And if you
ask, when should we expect something like that back so that we can begin to act on it?
I think if you asked, if you tasked NASA to generate some architectural trades like that, and they put some series of efforts into it, I think on the order of a few months would be perfectly reasonable. Tons of these architectural works have already been done. Doug Cook has done and read most all of them. I'd be hard-pressed to think of one he hasn't read. And so the material and information is there. I think it's really the cost and the budget analysis and the programmatic phasing of what's sustainable is really the most biggest uncertainty.
So is it a matter of simply giving NASA a directive and a time frame so that we can then get on the process?
With some clear constraints, and that if certain requirements can't be met, or certain budget caps and whatever can't be met, then a prioritization of what you relax. So a sense of priorities in order for programmatic management trades to take place.
Two space experts, Lester Lyles and Scott Pace, speaking on February the 27th to a hearing of the Science, Space and Technology Committee in the United States House of Representatives. This has been the fourth of five space show programs in which we explore the suggestion that NASA send a manned spaceflight past Venus and Mars. The 2.5-year flight would launch in 2021 if approved. Our next look at this daring proposal will concentrate on some of the technology required for missions to Mars. This series is researched, written, produced, and presented by Andrew Rennie.
This is the voice of the Southern Suburbs, 88.3 Southern FM.